Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
My friends, it is 2020. This is the first episode of 2020 of the new year, of us returning to the office to make the hashtag content.
Can you believe it's been 20 years since the millennium?
Ridiculous. To be honest, I couldn't until now, but it is ridiculous. Also, the year that Cyberpunk 2077 comes out.
Also very true, and a bunch of other games that we're going to talk about today.
Well, I know. So basically, I went through all of the most anticipated things for the rest of the year, and then we blind ranked them the same way that we do for the Game of the Year stuff, where we had the finalized list of 10 games and we ranked them. Whatever you put at number one got 10 points all the way descending down to 1 point at the bottom, and then I blind ranked them together so you guys don't know what our most anticipated games are.
No, we're kind of obsessed with this format.
I think it's fun.
There was no real reason to do it for this, but I'm pleased we did.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like it's our thing now. I bond with you two over this.
Look, if you're in your seventh year of list making, you've got to think of ways to spice it up. So as a spice runner, Poe Dameron, I'm doing it. So to bust out the most anticipated games, we'll reveal them as we go. Number 10 with only 4 points was Animal Crossing New Horizons.
Yeah, you need to tell me why this is, why I need to get excited for this.
Well, it's weird, right? Because I love Animal Crossing. Have you guys played any Animal Crossing?
No, but people tell me to all the time.
Yes, it's lovely. Very much wholesome. I only played New Leaf for a little bit. My wife has a Happy Home Designer, which we got in the run-up to getting a house, but that's actually one of the worst ones. But I mean, we'll get past Animal Crossing quite quickly because nearly everything else on here is a bigger deal. But the reason that game matters is just that it's the most wholesome thing ever. Just make your little animal avatar and just make friends and trade fish.
Isn't Tom Nook a bit of a wrong-un?
Yes, so he's kind of lovable, but he's the guy that comes in and cashes in. He's the tax man. So he's always coming in going, you can't afford that house. You can't afford this. What are you doing? And you're like, oh God, Tom Nook, you've got a cool amiibo, but Jesus.
Hang on, I thought this was wholesome holiday game. Management 2K20.
This is the weird thing with the new one, because they're doing, like, it's on an island. It's like this tourist thing, and you arrive on this island and you make your haven.
And you never leave. And
potentially you never leave. Mr. Nook seems to be there. I don't know if KK Slider is there, but he's a guitar playing dog that I hope sort of, you know, flies it at some point.
Excellent.
But the only worry I have with this is that they might be bringing across too much of the stuff from Pocket Camp. I don't know if you guys played that on the phones.
Very briefly.
Yeah, so that was a microtransaction grindy nightmare where it was like, oh, all the lovely wholesome things you've been doing for decades or for a long time at this point, what if we just charged you to speed up? It takes 20 hours unless you want to pay 50 pence. And it was like, oh God, Nintendo, do you have to ruin everything on phones? Apparently.
They can't do that. Like, their phone division it's been quite bad, man. Like, over the past,
been terrible, to be honest.
The phone division sounds like some sort of Nazi war group. That's already a bad sign.
At this stage, those games are war crimes, so it's bad. But I mean, yeah, they ruined Dr. Mario, Mario Kart, they somehow got wrong. It was just like, whatever. But I hope that none of those lessons that they trialed in that game come across to the full one, and we can just have a nice, wholesome time on Animal Crossing.
Because that's why I love the Nintendo Switch. I played it a lot over Christmas, and I got into Pokemon for the first time ever.
Yes.
And I want games like that for the little Switch, where I can just sort of, to me, that console is associated with, you know, it doesn't have any of the baggage that the PlayStation 4 has. And when I go onto it, I don't feel like I'm overwhelmed by systems. And I just get to play these little experiences that transport me to a different world for a little bit. And Animal Crossing is one that I've always wanted to get into, but never have had a jumping on point, apart from, you know, the phone one, which obviously I tried.
Yeah, don't do that.
And now I'm hoping, Scott, this can be the one for me.
I think it will be. As to end that point, what animal would you guys play as? You can play any animal on an island in clothes.
Is this like a furry question?
Yeah.
Which furry are you going to be?
Yes. I'm going to be a sloth, so in a little tux.
Does that come with like speed impediment?
Sadly, yes, but it does mean I can build stuff really slowly and it's really worth it. That's at the end.
The but there was meant to be a good thing that you get at the expense of being slow.
I want to be a little slow sloth on my couch, making my house.
That's quite good, that, actually.
Yeah. Come trade fish. Don't be afraid to catch fish.
Can you be a fish?
Yeah, that's kind of
good. You can't be a fish.
I was going to say, if you could be a fish, that would be kind of terrifying.
It is weird because they've given life to very many animals, but you still catch fish and trade them and stuff like that. But I guess the fish don't have voices, unless I missed that.
I think I'd be a little penguin. Can you be a penguin?
Can be a penguin.
I'll be
one of the characters is already a penguin, I think. But you could probably be a little penguin.
Can I be a seal that screams all the time?
I don't believe so, but maybe New Horizons on an island. Maybe they'll be screaming seals. Anyway, number 9 was Watch Dogs Legion with 6 points. Now, I forgot this even existed.
Yeah.
What did you guys think?
Well, before we even came in, you mentioned this game exists, and I thought, didn't that come out last year? And then it didn't come out last year.
That was Days Gone.
But
right?
You know what? It sucks because I'm very negative on it there, obviously, but I'm actually quite looking forward to Watch Dogs. Even the first one I quite liked, but I really like Watch Dogs 2, and I thought they took it into an interesting, you know, direction. I like what they're doing, that every sort of NPC can be in your team and can be controllable. I like that persistent nature to it. I need to see a little bit more. It does seem very much like another Ubisoft game at a time when Ubisoft are releasing more and more other Ubisoft games, but hopefully it's going to be good. I want this franchise to succeed in the way it was supposed to back at the dawn of the generation.
You just want to play Bethel, don't you?
Just I was going to say,
old Bethel, just like shooting down all the people. You've got your furries. I've got her.
I don't have
Ethel
any.
And Bethel.
No,
I'm not really keen on Watch Dogs, and it's a shame because I know there was good things about Watch Dogs 2, but obviously I feel as though everyone was kind of a way to lay your marker down for their entire generation of consoles. That first Watch Dogs E3 demo, and then the subsequent launch was definitely not the way to do it. And I feel as though that's kind of a cloud that lingers over this franchise. Mm-hmm. And between, you know, The Division 2 and Ghost Recon Breakpoint that released last year, you'd be kind of in a I don't want to say it's a make or break situation right now, because they will keep making games forever and ever and ever, but this has to be something genuinely unique. And all, you know, I guess it depends on whether that system where you can become Bethel from down Coronation Street.
Who's the grandmother of you?
Yes.
Grandmother?
The grandmother.
The grandmother, if you haven't seen her yet.
Basically that needs to actually stick the landing, and if it doesn't, then this could be a bad thing.
Apparently they've got a bunch of like new technology, because the thing is, Ubisoft are obsessed with procedural generation in all of its forms, whether that's level-based stuff, environment stuff, whatever, different quest systems, and apparently they've designed some sort of system with this that procedurally generates animations based on who you're playing as, and it seems that, like, they want to make an entire city playable, but to make that differentiable, they have to then give every single person a unique feel when you're moving as them. And I get that. I think it'll be class-based or type-based. I think they'll have the grandmother animation set and then the teenager animation set, and I think it'll just be kind of like that.
I think that's a decent way to do it. I have some slight optimism for this game, just because at the end of 2019, when Ubisoft did their last financial report, they kind of acknowledged that Breakpoint was a major underperformer. And
that
even
was
Division
a game that I forgot happened.
Exactly. Division 2, like you said, even that underperformed. So they recognized that. They pushed a bunch of games out of their initial windows for this year. So hopefully they're giving every single project the time it needs and the resources it needs to actually be interesting and unique and good. But then again, this is Watch Dogs 3. Maybe they're just pumping it out because they need some game. I don't know.
To sort of close out the Watch Dogs point, for me, the IP is still quite scarred from what it represented at the beginning of the generation. I do love Watch Dogs 2, but I don't think, well, I say love, I really like Watch Dogs 2, but I think they could do with just abandoning it. I don't think the Watch Dogs name has that much worth. And the best possible scenario is like, yeah, they made it good, I guess.
In conclusion, stop trying to make Watch Dogs a thing.
Yes,
a thing.
Mr. Legion. Number 8 with 10 points was Streets of Rage 4. Now, I put this on here because obviously it's Streets of Rage. It's a big old deal. They're doing a numeric sequel for the first time in quite a while, about 20 years or something. And I think it's just worth talking about something like River City Girls was so well animated.
Still haven't played that. I really
Oh, God, it's gorgeous. Because it's weird. For me, 3D brawlers sort of died out, but there has been a handful of really well-made 2D brawlers that have, like River City Girls, Mother Russia Bleeds, you know, games that get around the whole, like, the awkwardness of trying to line up your lane when you're playing those games, and I hope that they sort of like take that forward. Like, what does the Streets of Rage IP mean to you guys?
Well, this is it. It's one that always kind of passed me by, but the fact that is, like you said, it's a numbered sequel for the first time in a while, and it looks like it's just trying to do what it does best without any kind of, like, I don't know, bells and whistles or whatever. I like that a lot of franchises seem to be returning and trying to, you know, give their franchises a new lease on life by giving you that numbered sequel. We've seen that fail with the likes of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5, but I have hope in this, and I know that wherever he is, our friend Richard is, you know, real important. I think he's out for lunch.
He's not someone who's died. Yeah, that's Richardson. He's still fine. But still, I mean, in regards to like the amount of animation that they seem to be putting into it, I think something like, again, River City Girls is one of the best like new games that prioritizes animation, and just like Scott Pilgrim was a great example.
I was
going to
mention
too.
That. Yeah. Like, I'm really not really like massive on this genre, but I loved Scott Pilgrim. That game was so, so good. And again, I'm really interested in playing River City Girls. Mm-hmm. So this is something that I think is great to have it as just as a presence, even if you're not going to pick it up. I think it's great to just have it and acknowledge it and say that, yes, we finally have these games are still going strong. I think that's really kind of inspiring in the age of, like, you know, so many, like, that I've already forgotten all the different crazy graphical techniques they use in the new current generation. Something about ray tracing.
There that's the one.
Yeah.
I just think in terms of like the amount of genres on the go at once, like it, like you said, it's just good to see. Number 7 with 13 points was Halo Infinite. I'm weirdly not excited about it, but I'm curious. This is an IP that I think should die, but because they are so determined to give it the reboot, it makes me curious. It makes me wonder what the hell they're going to do with it to make it worthwhile again.
As someone who, like, I loved Halo. I literally had my first PlayStation console was the PlayStation 4, and I went onto that after, you know, Microsoft's disastrous E3 where they basically, you know, crapped the bed with the Xbox One, and that was a shame because I missed Halo. I wasn't a big fan of Halo 4, I must admit. I thought the story was okay. I thought the multiplayer was kind of, they needed Bungie's, you know, emphasis on balance to really get it right. I thought they didn't, so I'm still kind of just here and there.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, sometimes I come back home and I'm like, oh, I really wish I had the Master Chief Collection so I could play Halo 3 multiplayer, because, oh my God, that was amazing. So I'm kind of curious about what they're going to do with this. As a Halo fan, I'm probably not going to get it because I'm not going to get an Xbox anytime soon. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of reassuring to have Halo still going, but it's the fact that it's still Master Chief and what they're going to do with this. I have no idea what to expect.
My thing that makes me, I don't know how they modernize Halo in terms of the things that this generation brought to the genre, like the weightiness of Destiny or Titanfall 2 or Doom. Like the kineticism of Doom is so insane. I know that's very signature of that franchise, but in terms of, like, you know, first-person shooters that we go back to a lot, they tend to have ground slides and more like movement options and things like that. Whereas, like, I go back to Halo quite a lot, like the Master Chief Collection, and it is quite slow in comparison. And I wonder what the hell they can even do to the core of Halo without making it not Halo
anymore.
That's
the thing. I think they should keep it, because one of my issues with Halo 4 is that I know Halo Reach had the sprint button and they had the armor abilities, which were fine. You know, I didn't hate them, but they were kind of a bit weird. I think Halo works because it stood still, but in a good way. It's had a great formula, and it should keep to that. It hasn't tried to necessarily mimic other franchises. I know it has with Halo 4. It did kind of take some other elements from other FPSs, but for the most part, Halo should just be proud of what Halo is and keep Halo Halo-y. It doesn't need to be adapting to different kind of trends, which is why the open world, it's meant to be semi-open world.
They've sort of teased it. They've just said that they're trying to build like bigger play spaces. The usual.
Yeah, it's weird to me. I think it could work, but at the end of the day, you know, maybe I just have Halo 3 and that's why.
I wonder how they get around the nostalgia pull. Like, that's, it's such an old franchise at this
point. Conflict with you a bit there, you know, because I'm like a lapsed fan. I used to love it, but for me, I've grown out of it, I feel, because it stayed so similar. But I feel like since 343 Studios took over, they've done like a pretty good job, but because it's not at the level it was at, you know, Halo 2, 3, Reach, I feel like it's done the same thing more or less. It's tried to introduce a couple new things here and there, but the bones of it for me have stayed too similar. But it's not been at the level that it should be. If it maintained the level and consistently delivered Halo solid experiences, you know, that were of that caliber, I would be happy to have more of it. But it reminds me a lot of where Gears was after Gears 4, where a new team came in and it felt like Gears, but it was more Gears and it wasn't quite the Gears you remembered. And it's like, that could be fine, but I want to know, I don't know how you do it, but I want to know what a different Halo would look like, a revolutionized Halo, because I think there is space for it, especially in an era where so many franchises and IP have been revitalized. Like, you couldn't get me to play a God of War game 5 years ago, but now God of War 2 is one of my most anticipated games of all time, and I wonder if you can do something similar with Halo, not in the way, you know, that game approached its revitalization, but just doing something new.
I was going to say ODST was a great, like, it's pretty much the exact same game play as Halo 3 and 2, except you're not playing as a super soldier with like shields and stuff, but it was kind of a similar intent there, and I feel as though if maybe you wanted to bring in different gameplay elements, you could do like a Halo Marine or something like that, and going through the different units and not make it a Spartan thing. Maybe that's how they diversify the genre and make sure that, or the series rather, and make it kind of more up to date. I don't know. I feel it's like leaning into Master Chief in this day and age is a little bit of a crutch.
That's the thing. And the reason that those older games were so fascinating, even it works for Gears 2, is that it was an upward trajectory from one creative team going like, okay, we're going to do this next, then this next, and then this next. And you could tell that they had a bunch of ideas they just couldn't put into one game, so we'll do it next time. Then, you know, the knock-on effect of handing it over to someone else is that they just didn't have that creative foundation.
Yeah.
So, I guess we're all just curious what the hell Halo even is at this point. But maybe it'll work. Number six is Doom Eternal with 18 points. This is something that it got delayed from last year. But I just want more Doom. I adore the 2016 one.
This is where I'm at for most of the games on this list, I think, that I'm excited for them. But there's nothing that's really getting me hyped because it's all, or it feels like it's all more of something. And I love Doom 2016, and I love returning to that game. And when I look at Doom Eternal, I'm thinking, my God, the gore in this is insane. But I can't get the passion for it that I'm going back to Rich. I'm mentioning Rich so much in this podcast.
He's not in the room, sadly.
So much. But I feel like, you know, people get really excited for this, and that's so cool. Mm-hmm. But I just wish I had that same fire, because I know I'm going to enjoy it. I know I'm going to definitely play it day one. But I just want somebody to kick me up the arse a little bit and say, this is why you need to be really, really excited for this and drop everything and look forward to it.
Right, right, right. Yeah, I think that's the thing with Doom, is that they had this amazing engine, and they managed to recontextualize Doom Guy. They sort of have this whole weird story narrative thing where it is the actual Doom Guy from the original one that somehow has survived all this time, but he's only annoyed about the fact that everyone keeps going like, you're the prolific messiah, and he's like, I don't care. I'm just going to punch everything.
He's a very naughty boy.
He really is. Like, you know, he's getting exposition and different tutorial prompts, and he's just breaking everything around him. He's like, I don't care. I just want to kill everything. And I quite like that they sort of like, you know, they make that sort of the meta narrative that you do just want to kill everything in Doom. Who cares about the story? Yeah.
I think I agree with Josh. It basically is more of the same. Not to say that is a bad thing, but you know, when you're looking at games that you really want to get behind, it tends to be stuff that does feel genuinely new. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that, you know, the new Doom series doesn't have its place in the FPS genre. I think it's a unique entity compared to what we've been given for, you know, the past console generation or the past two console generations. So I'm really excited for it. But again, I kind of see not the trepidation, but kind of just the lukewarm kind of like, oh, yeah, no, I'm good.
I know what you mean. I think the thing that seems to separate Doom is that sort of like combat chess feel where it's like, well, melees give you more ammo, and if I use this ability, then I can get more health. And it's like they've added to that with the new energy sword, and they've got like a shoulder mounted predator cannon now that spews fire and stuff. And it's like that idea of, you know, you play it like you approach different arenas of enemies in a very specific way, and it's like you're always keeping an eye on your health meter and things like that. So I think that can get away from it just being a big gore fest, but it depends how much they play into that in terms of making that more of the signature Doom element.
Yeah,
stuff.
I think it's because I view that and Wolfenstein as sort of, you know, kind of like this synonymous thing. You know, right. Bethesda brought these classic IPs back and breathed new life into them, and I thought Doom, the original 2016 game, was so good, and the first Wolfenstein was so good, and treated these IPs in kind of a way that, you know, was honorable to their past, but did something new, got people interested in them. But then Wolfenstein's sequel kind of didn't really know what to do after it sort of, you know,
brought it
back. I thought it was more of the same. Like, I did really enjoy it. I really enjoyed playing it. I thought it was tight, but I didn't feel like they built on it in enough of a way. I don't know. I worry that Doom Eternal is going to do the same. Like you said, we had that great kind of meta narrative about the Doom guy in the first game. And I wonder, I just hope they don't lean on that too much again. I want them to sort of double down on it and not just kind of, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard being, I feel like I'm down on a game I'm really looking forward to.
It's still betweenness. I know it's new year. Yeah. It's still in that weird period where it's just like, what is time? Yeah. What is time as a concept?
If we're talking about games, we'll get onto this, but if we're talking about high profile games that I'm like, then we'll get to one of them in a bit.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend.
But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
But for now, number five, Senua Saga Hellblade 2 with 19 points. This is something that I think will completely come into its own in the sequel, mainly because the whole point with Ninja Theory with the original one was mainly focused on like the graphic, the presentation of it, making something look like a AAA game with an indie budget. And I'm so curious what the hell they do with that character. I love the world that they've built. I think the combat had so much, like there was so much you could clearly go from where they started. It was a very like simplistic combat system in the original. So for me, that would be the game that has the most to offer, I think. In terms of like new stuff.
Yeah, I'm the most interested. I think I'll put this as number two or something on mine because I really enjoyed the first one, but I didn't ever imagine a world where there was going to be a sequel.
I know, yeah.
Even when Ninja Theory was bought by Microsoft, I didn't even consider the fact that this could happen.
Yeah.
So that it is, it makes sense from a business standpoint because that first Hellblade was so big and such a surprise. Mm-hmm. But I don't know where they're going to take it, which is exciting because they might mess it up, but they might do something really interesting and special. I thought, for me, the first game, from a gameplay perspective, had a lot of flaws. There was a lot of repetition. Like you said, the combat was cool, but there's so much you can build on top of that. But for me, the story and the narrative and the character of Senua kind of finished it off in a sort of, it was self-contained in my eyes, and I don't know how you continue that story, which to me is the biggest hook, but I'm really excited to see what they do with it.
I think it'll be a flashback, just because in the little trailer they put out alongside the Xbox Series X, seems to show like when her tribe were like fully operational and taking on this warring tribe, and it's like all of that stuff is in the past in the original one. And if they're calling it Senua's Saga, then maybe they're just going to make things that plug into different parts of the timeline. Did you get a chance to play it?
No, I didn't. I really wanted to, though. I was put off by people saying that it just wasn't that... there was a lot of talk about it being very repetitive, and I was
the story really drew me in.
I love the connotation, the commentary on mental health and stuff like that. And it's a shame if this is Microsoft, it's going to be an Xbox exclusive anyway.
Yes.
So that means it's a no for me. That's a shame because I really want to check it out because it's again a new lore, new mythos. I'm really excited to see that kind of. It's not for me. I kind of got the impression that even though it was a fantasy game, it was genuinely unique. It didn't lean into many cliches, and that's a good thing considering so much of the fantasy genre these days is so cliched. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for it in that respect.
Yeah, man, you can tell Ninja Theory did an absolute ton of research for it as well. But yeah, I mean, I'm always giving mixed signals with Hellblade because I love everything about it other than the fact of the rune puzzles, which make up like 70% of that game. So when I was going through it, I was always like, oh God, more of these. But ultimately, I do think it's obviously a worthwhile thing. Number four, Cyberpunk 2077 with 21 points. That is my, I'm throwing my card in as game I could not care less about right now.
Really?
But I wish I did.
I just want to see it.
You guys have way more positive.
The thing is, like, it's not even a case of like I'm excited for it. It's like it's one of those. I feel as though I've come in bummed out by the ham-fisted marketing, just the idiocy from CD Projekt Red in so many regards. But at the same time, you know, I'm still curious because it's they made The Witcher.
Yes.
And, you know, this is still an interesting angle to go for. I think you've said to me before that if you're going to do Cyberpunk, you should really go unique and go full ham with it. And I feel as though they're kind of, everything we have seen so far is a little bit derivative. Maybe not even a little bit, just very derivative.
Quite hammy.
And I want it to be good. Like, you know, at the end of the day, it's a first-person shooter as well. So I definitely think they've gotten a great premise here and they're not taking it to a great conclusion. That might be premature to say. You know, the game isn't out yet. But at the same time, I definitely understand the trepidation. I'm just at this point now where I'm like, I can't be asked for the discourse. I just want to see what it's like now.
Yeah,
and just, you know, that sounds really kind of downbeat. But at the same time, I do want to get hands-on with it and just see what it's like.
Well, that kind of plays into my thing. My thing is that I'm a stickler for new abilities, new things in games. And I come to CDPR for that. If you look at the trajectory of the Witcher series, they made massive fundamental differences from 1 to 2 to 3. And obviously 3 was the one that went as the biggest. And I adore the Witcher 3. I have like 600 hours in it or something. Like literally. And it's like, you know, at this point, I'm like, oh my God, it's the next thing from CDPR. But when I look at the gameplay footage, literally so far nothing has been, I've gone, oh, I can't wait to do that. I've just gone like, yep, it's a whole load of cyberpunk ephemera, but I'm not zeroing in on one particular thing. It's like dialogue trees, and it's like, it looks a lot like Deus Ex in terms of the way that you're going to play it. And that is fine, like obviously going to give us the most polished version of that, but I want something new, and I don't know if the new thing is just the scope. Like you said, maybe we'll just wait and see, but I wish there was something where I go, oh my God, that's going to change the industry, or that's going to be, you know, the
that's
reason it's a new thing.
Yeah.
Because it's all like arm blades and like dialogue trees, and it looks cool, but
I totally get that. But for me, when I went to The Witcher 3, I thought the same thing. Like when I look at the core gameplay of The Witcher 3, that's the least interesting part for me. Like it's the world and how you can impact that world. That's so exciting. And if that carries over to Cyberpunk 2077, Is that the title?
2077.
2077.
2020 is the book. 2077.
Losing my mind. That's it. Yeah, sorry. When you obviously you go over to that. If you can have the same impact on the world and you can still tell these stories, and the way that they've talked about it, they said that it was going to be not a smaller game than The Witcher 3. It's going to take you less time to complete, but that gives you more options for replayability, and there's going to be way more open-ended, you know, resolutions to quests, and that's what excites me the most. The fact that I can actually impact a world, because when I come to CDPR's games, I don't really go there for the pure mechanical inventiveness, although they are always quite solid, but they even only got solid around The Witcher 3. Like, if you go back and play
Witcher 2 and 3,
for me, The Witcher 2 isn't quite there in terms of, you know, raw combat and stuff exploration, but Witcher 3 was a step up. And I look at Cyberpunk and I think about how kind of smooth the trailers have been, but it's one of those games that where I'm with you and on it, where I just want to play it. I've seen so much of it. I've seen the big 40-minute demo that came out a few years ago now, and at this point, I just need it in my hands to get excited about it again, because I feel like I've seen all that I need to see.
My thing is, and this is the most petty thing in the world, but I wish it was third person. Right. I'm honestly not over that. I hate that it's first person. I wish that it was The Witcher 3 style. Like, the combat, I love the combat system in The Witcher 3. And, like, you know, that was one of the things that elevated so much more from Witcher 2. And it's just like, you know, have, like, iterate on that. Don't switch over completely to an FPS, something that you've never done before. And so it makes me trepidatious. But yeah, I adore synthwave music, cyberpunk stuff. It should be the most my jam ever. But I don't know. There's just something about it that I think I could do with seeing more of it.
Maybe that's why. Maybe it's because it's so you that you feel like you're so
suspicious.
Suspicious. Like, it can't be this good. It can't be the thing that I need. Number three is Ghost of Tsushima with 21 points. That was Mr. Ewan's number one, I think.
Yes. I'm so excited for this. I think, you know, you guys know that I love history. I love playing games that give me the chance to get immersed in a certain historical setting. And we've been crying out for a game set in feudal Japan for years now. You know, Assassin's Creed's not going to do it. Then, of course, Sucker Punch are coming now and said they're going to do it. And everything about it just looks incredible. I'm so excited for it. I've gotten back into my Kurosawa phase as well now with all the films on Blu-ray over Christmas. So yeah, I'm just, anything that is going to be, and for me, this looks like Red Dead Redemption 2, but make it in, you know, feudal Japan. It looks similarly ambitious. Narratively, presentation looks incredible.
It does
look
gorgeous.
Even though I definitely see some points to be concerned, I know they haven't really distinguished the gameplay as being anything too unique so far. But at the same time, I feel as though if the presentation and the world is that immersive, it's going to not matter too much to me personally, because this is basically what I look for in a video game.
I mean, so like Horizon Zero Dawn, like, might not have had that, well, anything original in terms of gameplay, but it did everything it did do so well that it still carried it. I think with Ghost of Tsushima, it reminds me of the way the Samurai games, but with like the wider sort of world of the newer Assassin's Creed. So I think there's a lot of elements that they can draw from to just make it completely badass. And like you said, the setting for me is the big thing in terms of the armor designs and just the environment and everything. Are you the same?
Yeah, I would fully agree. I'm so hyped for this game, not only because it looks so good and I love the setting, and I'm going to do the exact same thing that you're going to do, Ewan, and get into my Kurosawa phase again, but because I feel like when it comes to Sony's first party lineup over the past few years, obviously it's been amazing, but we've seen every single studio under their umbrella kind of step up a notch. Like you said, Horizon Zero Dawn, I felt, was a big step up for Guerrilla Games. Even Sony Bend released Days Gone last year, and while that wasn't quite the caliber of the rest, it was a step up from what they were doing before. Yet we haven't quite seen that from Sucker Punch, partly because they've only released one game this generation in Infamous Second Son, which was good, but I feel like now they've got a new IP, now they've got this new creative lease on life, you expect them to, like the rest of the studios, ratchet it up a notch. And I want to see what Sucker Punch firing on all cylinders looks like, because that's really exciting for me, and it's exciting for the future of the PlayStation brand as a whole.
I want to get I want to get hands on with the combat system, because when they initially showed it off, it was very much like almost like a rock paper scissors, like attacking, counter attacking type thing, which is like Souls adjacent. But I hope that they've like focused it way in.
Weirdly, having come from Jedi Fallen Order now, it looks like Souls adjacent. It looks kind of similar to that in the sense that you have your sword, you pull it out, you've got to be mindful of counters and stuff. I'm curious to see how the stealth aspect comes into play, because obviously that's more the titular Ghost of Tsushima in this seems as though he's part samurai, part Ronin, part ninja thing. So I'm interested to see how they pool those different mechanics across. I'm really down for it.
It looks sweet. That was your number one. And this is great, because the way that the top threes worked out is it's all of our number ones. Nice. So number three was Ghost of Tsushima, 21 points. My number one is Final Fantasy VII's remake with 24 points, which just looks like the best thing in the world, to be honest. Every single thing they've been drip feeding out with that just looks
Cardinal
absolutely gorgeous.
Sin here. I never played the original Final Fantasy
VII. Neither has JB.
So I'm absolutely hyped to play this.
I'm strong. surrounded by people whose lives could be so much better.
I'm sorry for being born after you. But this is why it's so exciting, because we're still we're anticipating this game because it looks so interesting. And like we said in the news video this morning, I finally get to play this game that I've heard so much about, that I know so much about. I practically know every beat of the story, or all the big ones. But I being able to contextualize all that in a new sort of, you know, I don't know, a new approach to it, a new spin on it, a definitive edition, perhaps, bringing back old content. It's exciting for me, even though I have no attachment to the original game. I was watching the opening for the remake and the opening for the original side by side, and that even blew me away. I was blown away by a zoom this morning.
Well, even the thing that they do with Aerith in the remake, the way that it's pretty much the same actions where she's walking through one of the streets in Midgard, but the way that they just show her looking at this leaking pipe, which is like ties into the whole idea of like, you know, the nuclear reactor that's in that city and what the nuclear reactors mean in that game and everything. They pretty much tie her entire arc into her opening actions, and I adore that. It's just little things that you can tell, you know, they've lived with this franchise for 20 years, and we all have, and it's just like, yeah, they're gonna go back and tweak little bits and bobs, and they've changed some story stuff around. They're seeding Sephiroth way earlier in the game, who's like the main villain, but like he basically comes into the story in a major way in the second half of the original, whereas now they're just going like, okay, this is the full script, because like if you read into the whole history of Final Fantasy VII, it was translated by one person, same as Metal Gear, and it was just the English translation had a whole bunch of errors, but they didn't have any patches back then, so they never changed it, and obviously at this point I feel like they're going back and going like, okay, that should have been there, that should have been there, and just making it work and just editing it in a way better way. In terms of, you were saying you know most of the plot beats, Ewan, what do you know right now?
Very little. I know there's a whole eco message going on, which is incredibly depressing given that it's 20 years on from when that game released.
It's going to be so poignant.
Nothing has changed, so I'm looking forward to crying about that. Is this the one where someone gets stabbed and it's really sad?
It could be.
Yeah, I think
maybe.
Yeah,
it could
probably.
Be, I don't know.
I know all about that then. It's the person that I'm thinking of.
That's like, still not the biggest stuff in that. It's one of the biggest things in that game, but there's a lot of big reveals, like Vader, I'm your father style seismic reveals. There's one big reveal that I would say is bigger than the stabby thing that I think isn't as well known. So I think a lot of people would be surprised by that. But like I said, I think the way that they're seeding all that stuff is great. So we'll see. Number one is The Last of Us 2 with 28 points. We all had this extremely high.
Yay.
And it was gorgeous. Last of Us 2, I think, just for me, it's the characters. Just seeing Joel's old face made me cry. And I think even just anything with them, they can do anything. Naughty Dog could completely phone in on the gameplay side, and I wouldn't care as long as the story is worthwhile.
Yeah, I'm the exact same. The gameplay itself, I think, from that one gameplay-centric trailer we've seen, looked really interesting and cinematic and way more dynamic than the first Last of Us. Because I thought, even though Uncharted is the Naughty Dog game that you go to when you think of, you know, interesting combat, that you're swinging around all over the place, you're doing these agile moves, I thought the intensity of the original game's mechanics shouldn't be overlooked. Like the scrapping in that game, throwing a brick at someone and then clocking them in the face, felt so good and felt so, you know, gritty and down to earth. I feel like if you transfer that over to The Last of Us 2 on a new generation and you build on that, it might have the sort of caliber of gameplay to match its story, which I'm sure will be good. And like you said, this might... I don't know if it should exist. It might be disappointing from a story perspective, but I would just want to spend more time with these characters, and I trust in Naughty Dog and Neil Druckmann to deliver something good.
Yeah, when this was first announced, I was very, very worried, because I felt as though The Last of Us worked so well as just a self-contained, singular story, and so far I feel as though I've kind of been proven wrong. I'm looking forward to seeing what they actually do here. I do feel as though they probably found the narrative justification to, you know, really propel this series going forward. If it does come any place afterwards, that'd be really weird. My only worry at the moment is the barrier gaze trope, which is very prevalent in the last trailer, but at the same time, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with
I'm hoping that's an inversion, but I know the way that trailer's edited, it does seem like they've maybe gone down a route that they could have done something more with. But at the same time, twice we've been proven wrong with Naughty, like thinking that we don't need another sequel. Then Uncharted 4 happened, and then Lost Legacy happened, and it was like both of those were brilliant. I actually prefer Lost Legacy to the main Uncharted games anyway, and I think that, yeah, in regards to, like you said, Neil Druckmann just taking full reign, like Bruce Straley sort of stepped away a little bit, I just think that, like, their opening statement when they announced it was, we wouldn't be doing this if it didn't feel like it was necessary, and I just assume there's more that they're dying to get out there in regards to the characters.
Yeah, there's obviously like the worry when you like look at the trailers and you worry that it might just be grim and violent for the sake of it, but when it comes to the most recent Naughty Dog games, especially the ones ones by Neil Druckmann, Uncharted 4 especially, I think that they are mature in sort of tone and content as well as like kind of just being violent. Mm. Like they always have something interesting and heavy to say about violence in general. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Neil Druckmann keeps coming out and saying this is about cycles of violence
and trying
to break that and hate and stuff makes me feel like it's not just going to be this kind of edgy, gritty, post-apocalyptic drama. It's going to have real kind of human nuance to it, at least I hope. And that's why I hope that the trailer is misleading and they do something more kind of complex or, you know, surprising with sort of the way the narrative is set up, which I do hope they do.
Do you think this, as like a sort of closing thing, do you think this will be the last one, that this is the one time they can go back to it? And if they pull this off, that'll be near enough a miracle. Or because it's called Part 2, will we get more?
Who knows? Like, yeah. In the case, like, I feel as though it's too hard. I thought Last of Us would just be The Last of Us, but like, you know, they've gone,
it is called The Last of Us.
Yes, they've done Part 2, so it's going to be Last, Two Last,
The More
two
of Us. Yeah. Two Last, Two Laster. Yeah, I don't know. Because they're calling it Part 2, like, that makes me think that they could do more stories. I love the world that they've set up, and there's a lot of stuff in the theories that are doing the rounds at the minute in regards to what's happening with the different factions in that world. Like, the Fireflies have become this sort of like different thing. Like, they're warring with, I forget what you call the New Order, the new religious sect that is trying to assassinate the Fireflies. Didn't know all this when we did the theory video, which you can go and find. But at the same time, I think that they're doing more with seeding the world and saying that, well, these different factions are coming up, which plays into the cycle of violence stuff and the idea of like human nature repeating itself and forever being at war with one another.
Yeah, I feel like if we do see another game, because I feel like Sony won't want to let The Last of Us brand go, I'm not sure if it'll be by Naughty Dog, just because I feel like, you know, Neil Druckmann's done this, but like you said, Bruce Straley's kind of stepped away from the company. I wonder if they'll want to do like a new IP or something new. They've sort of retired Uncharted. Maybe they do The Last of Us Part 2, finish the story of Ellie and Joel, but keep the world kind of there for other people to explore different avenues, whether it's down spin-offs or whatever, and then kind of jump onto something new.
I hope that after this, because it used to be they do a trilogy, a spin-off kart racing game, which we didn't get, Last of Us kart racing, or Uncharted, and then do a new IP. So assumedly with the PS5, it'll be something new. But considering the 10 games that we have, like 2020 is already pretty damn stellar, and most of these are coming in the first 5 months.
Yeah.
So it looks good.
Exciting, yeah. We've got new consoles coming out at the end of the year.
I know.
Like, that's what I'm hyped for.
It's ridiculous. But yeah, let us know what you think down in the comments below of your personal favorites, or come find us on social media if you're listening along on the audio platforms. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ewan Patterson.
That was a really good little
I ran out of
thing.
Air, and then I thought
I couldn't do the rhythm.
Do a descending beat.
I'm Ewan Patterson.
Bump, he is.
Bump, bump.
I'm just going to deadpan as goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye. Shatnered it.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.